I think some very interesting comments on my Twitter feed at Deacon Punnett on Twitter. Chris Hall wrote to say he took a course identical to this kind of content he's discussing many years ago. I think that's cool. I know that some people did. You'll have a content analysis course like this, but this idea of statement specific, that is something which I'm enjoying, and I hope that he's not Mark McClish, our guest, is not too badly affected by the coronavirus for the number of different seminars he has coming up. I know it's affecting everybody. I know it's going to be topic A when we get to the open lines coming up next hour. We'll get to your calls here for Mark McClish. So just hang on to any of your thoughts about the coronavirus or anything until next hour. That would be great. I don't want to mix up the two. But I will say this, though. So K-State University, where I teach, closed along with, I don't know if every single college in America is closed after spring break, but we are. We're moving everything online. And the kind of things that we're able to do easily online are hard to do right away. So that's the big pivot. Everybody's trying to take what would have been complicated course material and simplify it and get it online. It's really tricky. But it's better than the alternative. And I think, and I was just telling this to Dan Galante, is there are colleges all over the United States, universities too, for that matter, smaller ones, whose future may depend on how well we handle the coronavirus outbreak. And just even the being able to curtail it early enough for people to kind of calm down a little bit. If we can keep the number of deaths down, if we can do the right things that the outbreak doesn't keep, cycling back up again, there are so many small colleges across the country that are already facing an existential threat. It's already become kind of a game of haves and have-nots for colleges and universities. Some are growing and some are, shrinking to the point of extinction. And I'm just putting this on the table, maybe for a conversation later on. This time next year, you could be looking at a spate of very well-known small liberal arts colleges and smaller universities that are going to go under. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but we'll be keeping an eye on the story. And it reminds me, coming up tomorrow night in the first hour, the great influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history. John Barry will be on talking with us in the first hour. If you think we're overreacting, you would read the first chapter of this book and go, okay, maybe it's good. Maybe we're better off doing that, that whole idea of ounce of prevention for a pound of cure. The great influenza is a great example of how not to do it, and we'll get to that coming up in the first hour tomorrow night. But first, your calls for Mark McClish next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Coast to Coast AM, Mark McClish, veteran U.S. Marshal, retired expert on statement analysis. So I just asked you just before the break for fun whether or not you were married or whether you were in relationships where this created a problem on who could tell who was lying. Mark?
Well, when I teach a class, I always give them the warning, do not use these techniques on family and friends. Or you may not have any more family and friends. And yes, when you're talking to family or friends, sometimes you'll hear a certain key word that indicates possible deception, but I let go in one ear and out the other. Because one, sometimes they're not as objective, but in an interview setting, I'm going to ask some follow-up questions to see, well, what's going on here.
Yeah.
In an interview setting, if they're being deceptive, it's going to pop up several different ways throughout their statement. But when you're talking to a friend, it may just be one word and that's it. And that's one of the keys, is you're looking for several indications of deception before you come to that conclusion.
So my follow-up question is, did you learn that the hard way?
Oh, yes, I'm married, so I learned it.
All right. Wildcard line, Michael is in Virginia Beach on Coast to Coast AM for Mark McClish. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you so much, Ian, and good evening to you, Mr. McClish. How do you spell your last name, sir?
It's M-C-C-L-I-S-H.
Okay, great. Now, Ian is very interesting. He wanted to analyze the word just, and he applied it to politicians. He didn't give us any names, but I remember one very big name using the word just. And the phrase was just kidding, and the politician was President Donald Trump, referring to his statement, Russia, release the emails. Now, the facts about that situation on background by the investigative journalist in American history, the one who wrote the story on the most corrupt congressman in history. I'm talking about Seth Hetna. I'm talking about his book, Trump, Russia, A Definitive History. His analysis of meeting in Trump Tower, where Veselnitskaya, the Russian lawyer, made an offer. And what did Junior, Donald Trump Jr. say? Oh, well, he wanted something about Russian adoption. But in reality, Donald Trump Jr., and if you will analyze...
We gotta get to a question here for the guest, right?
Okay, well, this is the United States of America we're talking about. Donald Trump Jr. and Donald Trump Sr., their statements about that meeting and about those emails reveal this.
This is a question for the guest. Remember, that was our kind of what our hope was here. But Mark, I will pull out from Michael a fair point, which is Donald Trump Jr. often said we were just talking about Russian adoption. It was just this or that. So speaking to that point and the idea of just kidding when he said to the Russians, you know, please, you know, investigate Hillary's emails. How do you hear that? I mean, how does that hit your ear when you see or hear somebody saying something like that?
Well, yeah, when they're saying we were just talking about this, to me, it's an indication that perhaps you weren't just talking about that. Or, as Michael pointed out, when President Trump said, you know, just kidding, you know, when, a lot of times when people say, oh, it was just a joke, or even using the word just in that situation, they weren't just kidding. I mean, I'm sure the president would love for them to release emails if they had them.
Right.
Try to kind of pass it off. People might say, oh, I was just kidding. And when in reality, they probably weren't just kidding.
And I think that goes back again. I think, you know, Republican or Democrat, I think a lot of people just use that phrase just to try to minimize so that
right.
They're just trying to say, focus on this one aspect. So, yeah, I accept that. Let me go to Thomas in La Jolla on Coast to Coast for Mark McClish. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, Ian. Thank you for accepting my call. And Mark, I want to say first, thank you for your service, Marshall. And Mark, a simple question. Have you done statement analysis of the audio, video, or print of the astronauts, particularly like with the space shuttle, space station, or particularly the moon landings?
Okay. Mark?
I have not. I have not seen any statements about that or analyzed any statements in regards to that.
I would have been suspicious if Neil Armstrong had said, I'm just landing on the moon. That's all I'm doing. We'll go to Michael in Kansas on Coast to Coast AM for Mark McClish. Michael?
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Go for it.
Hi, Mark. That was a great question, by the way, Thomas. And I just wanted to say, Ian, about just a little bit about the coronavirus and the schools and everyone.
No, I was really clear about that. We got a question for Mark McClish. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I want to know about what he thinks or if he has an opinion about the Jeffrey Epstein case. And,
oh, yeah.
And
a lot of statements around that one way or another. Yeah. What do you think? So when you hear either somebody's admission of guilt, to one thing over something else, or when they are making statements, or later on when they're explaining how it was this guy ended up dead. Wasn't that a Marshal Service issue anyway, somehow? Or what department was involved in tracking this guy? I can't remember how it worked quite.
Well, he was in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons.
Okay.
When he died. Now, I have not looked at specific statements from that. I mean, I just, you know, saw various things in the news. I mean, there is a lot of questions that definitely were raised there that need to be looked at. I don't think it was as clear cut as some people want to think it was. But I haven't analyzed any statements that people gave. I don't know if they've released the statements that the officers that were watching gave.
That's, I don't know.
I'd like to see what they had to say about that.
So I think this is an interesting time to point out that when something is washed, a statement is washed through public relations before it's released, it probably corrupts what you can do for statement analysis to a point. If somebody is shaping a response at a PR level and they're attuned to words that could cause a problem.
It could, especially for celebrities. If their attorney or spokesperson wrote a statement for them, then it may not be the celebrity themselves that's telling us this. It's actually somebody else's language. But it'll still be there, but just maybe not as prominent.
No, and that's interesting. East of the Rockies, Joe is on Long Island. Joe, you're talking with Mark McClish.
Mark, I'd ask you about the tactic of omission of relevant facts or pieces of the puzzle, and just how do these people paint themselves into a corner with this stuff, like a boxer that gets cornered eventually?
Well, generally speaking, people do not want to lie, and so when they're given a statement, they don't want to admit either, because they may get in trouble, and so they try to give a truthful statement. But then what happens is, just as you point out, they start to box themselves into a corner, because they'll start using certain phrases that show us they've skipped over something in their story. And if we're listening closely, we're going to realize that, and then we're going to back them up in their story to try to find out what they skipped over. But the fact that people don't want to lie, but they don't want to confess either, is what eventually gets them into trouble, then, based on how they phrase their statements.
You know, I think that's never more true than it when a husband is appearing in front of a camera after his wife has gone mysteriously missing. And and there's so many clues. Or when a mom, you know, a child is missing, and all the things that they say, they try to say in the positive, like, I loved my wife, everybody knows I loved my wife. Well, that doesn't necessarily that doesn't explain away, explosive rage when somebody, rage punches or whatever. And just because you love somebody, it doesn't mean that you were able to control yourself. And so stuff like that is intriguing to me. Is that a good example all the time of people who just like literally are like handing out the store while they're talking?
Yeah, I mean, like you just pointed out, they may say, I love my wife, and that's probably a truthful statement. They did, but then in one moment, something happened and they may have killed her. But they'll give truthful statements, but they'll just leave out some information. Now, with missing person cases, it's interesting, because a lot of times the cases are solved when the parent or guardian or spouse talks about that missing person in the past tense.
Right.
Because they know something that we don't know. They know that missing person is dead. We saw that with, Scott Peterson and
right.
Charles Chase Merritt, who last year was convicted of killing the McStay family, talked about people that were missing in the past tense. And so it's something, we want to listen for as well.
But that's like the easy one, right? I mean, that's like the, if they start talking in the past tense, that's a slow roller to first right there, I think. Everybody can pick that up and step on the base. But let me get to west of the Rockies. Let's see. Tom is in Riverside on Coast to Coast AM. Tom?
Thank you, Ian. I wanted to ask Mark about my favorite pet peeve, I guess, about our government and whether our government's lying to us. George Bush statement he didn't know where he was when Kennedy was shot. Also, he talked about a new world order. His son, then weapons of mass destruction. I never bought any of those statements. I've been around. I'm 68. J. Edgar Hoover in a book said, some people think I'm powerful, but I'm nobody compared to these people. And then the 9/11 truth.
I want to put you on. I want to pause you because you're going on a rather long list. But I think your first. Can I highlight your first one? Because I'm very interested in that story about Bush Sr. On the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And I think it highlights something that is helpful here to point out is he gave conflicting statements. And so he did famously say later on, I can't remember where I was. But at the same time, we also know from other statements that he made that he pretty much copped to the fact that he was in Dallas that day. And that he knew what he had. He was the one who called in and reported on some other people. So let me just push that. Mark, when people give conflicting statements, how do you do statement analysis?
Well, obviously, if it's a conflicting statement, it's an indication that, one, they're not being truthful with us, or, you know, one of these statements isn't coming from memory then. And so, I mean, in an interview setting, we're just going to start asking some more follow-up questions to see, try to clarify, you know, which was it, which story you're telling me is the truth. Now, when people say, you know, I don't remember, I can't remember, it's an indication, and again, if we're talking about something that happened 50 years ago, maybe that's a truthful statement, but it's an indication that they are withholding some information when people make statements like that.
I couldn't tell you where I was at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'm getting to that.
But most people probably gonna remember of age where they were when, you know, when Kennedy
right.
was shot.
Right, on a big story like that. But part of that too, is when I was looking, the reason I brought it up is you have, let's say they made both statements with equal candor. And seemingly under the same circumstances, but were schooled enough to be able to just not give the same statement twice to create dissonance, cognitive dissonance. So only through a Q&A can you begin to unpeel that, is what you're saying. You can't just look at these two statements and analyzing it just on the statements alone. You need to follow up with other questions in order to determine.
Yeah, and that's what the techniques do. They let you know if somebody's being deceptive, if they're withholding some information or lying to you. And then that's what you're going to do. You're going to ask these follow-up questions then to try to flush it out a little bit more.
Okay.
And you may get more deceptive indicators, or you may hopefully, you know, get to the truth. And then a lot of times, you know, we get the confession then.
Yeah. I got 60 seconds for Mickey in San Antonio. Mickey, can you do 60 seconds before the bottom of the hour break?
I'm just... curious with the officer whether he would agree or disagree with me. I'm in the store this afternoon, and I'm going in the door, and the guy in the door is a new guy, and the previous person used to work there would always acknowledge me and say welcome to our store, and this person did not acknowledge me. I nodded and I walked on, but at that time I'm going into the store. I am going into the store. I normally speak in the present when I'm describing something like that.
Oh.
It doesn't matter if it happened today or it happened last year, it happened 10 years ago. It's just common for her to speak like that.
Is that a cultural thing from where you're from originally?
I'm sorry? United Kingdom. But yeah. There it is not uncommon for people to speak that way.
That's why I asked. All right, well, hang on a second because we're at the bottom of that hour, like I promised. So we'll have to wait until after this break to get a response on that. But I think that's a fair question. That we also have to know culturally whether when one is speaking in the present tense as though one is imagining a story. I run into this occasionally with students. I teach writing online, and that's not uncommon for a student to slip into present tense when they're describing something which had already happened because they're trying to relay the details as they remember them. So it comes out like a dream or something. Well, we'll come back to this. And then we're a half hour away from open lines on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I'm not lying when I say we'll get to your calls right away. Just we ran through, I think, all the ones that I had. So we're getting a fresh lineup here in just a second on Coast to Coast. And then we'll go to open line. So save your comments on the whole coronavirus thing until after the top of the hour. I know there are a lot of people out there have some thoughts on that to share and or questions, too, which is still, you know, we're in this time when everybody's kind of figuring things out. But we'll get through it. Listen, if you got a minute, go to coasttocoastam.com. Some great stories up there in the carousel, some great video. If you go back over by you being a Coast insider, you can go back and listen to the first hour with Tim Banal, who gave the wrap-up for the week. But I want to draw attention particularly to my friend Tom, who's a videographer. He shoots for the Dodgers, and he shoots for Arizona PBS. Mostly the stuff he does for Arizona PBS is in the promo department, but he's a really good shooter. And so he did a time lapse of the storm. And it was a kind of an epic storm today in Phoenix and a lot of places, including snow, I think, up in Flagstaff. So he did a little time lapse. And I love his point, which is that there's a rainbow in this cloud. And it's nice to know that there's a rainbow waiting for us, even still with the storm of this coronavirus raging. We'll find the other side. We may be, as the headline on CNN.com said the other night, we may be heading into a period where American life is changed indefinitely. It doesn't mean forever. It just means we don't know when it's going to go back to normal, or at least to way how things were. And there'll be a new normal, whatever that is. I have a feeling that we can make it. So hang on to those comments. We'll get to them after the top of the hour and take a look at that video of that rainbow, this time-lapse photography. It's up top of the fold in the carousel at coasttocoastam.com. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. So a good question asked at the bottom of the hour there from Mickey, I believe it was. I think he sounded Irish or from Northern Ireland, but that question is a really good one. Is how do you look at things culturally when people are telling a story in the present tense? Do you have a mental list of ways in which different people in different European nations or in Asia will tell a story that's different than the way we do?
I don't have a list, but now all of my studies have been on the English language as spoken in the U.S. So, as you point out, if we are analyzing a statement from somebody from another English-speaking country, then we have to take that in consideration, cultural differences. There may be certain phrases they use that we don't use, or it may be customary to use present tense language. Now, another thing to look for is that, you know, I tell people when a person's giving us a statement, it'll be like a parade passing in front of them as they describe what happened. Then this happened. Then this happened. Everything's in the past tense. But for some people, every once in a while, they may step off the curb and join that parade. So now as they're telling the story, it's like they're reliving it in their mind. And that can cause them to use present tense language. And what we're looking for is, especially if we're talking about an incident occurred, where did the change occur from past tense to present tense? It's great when they start talking about the incident, then maybe that's what happened. They're just reliving that in their mind. And again, that's why we're looking for several indications of deception, not just simply, okay, they used a couple present tense verbs. You know, they're lying. That may not be the case.
That's great. I have a friend from China, and of course, they use a different verb structure where he doesn't really have a past tense. In his dialect, they recondition verbs by using other words in the sentence to imply past tense. And so in learning English, he had to learn all these different, like, past perfect, past imperfect things that were, like, it was really confounding. Damn, I felt sorry for him. We're talking with Mark McClish, retired supervisor, deputy United States Marshal, on statement analysis. We go to the phones where I think we can pick it up with who's been waiting the longest. We'll go to Mark in New Hampshire on Coast to Coast AM. Mark.
Yes. Thank you kindly, and thank you, Mark, for your dedication.
Let me rephrase that. Mark. Go ahead.
Good to meet you. On the DOG, I was wondering if you could analyze my statement in what I might present. On the Department of Justice website, back in December 10th, there was an arrest of a Harvard professor and a student. The student had 21 vials of DNA that they were bringing over to Wuhan, China. And the student said that, while I have the DNA, we're going to do some lab tests, and it was actually for recreation. I believe that was in the statement. And is that deceptive, or is that the statement that he made? Would that be deceptive or a truthful statement? Or and
what was the exact statement he made?
Conversation.
He was saying that the student was caught with these vials that they were bringing back to China, and he said it was for recreation.
Yeah, and just a statement like that, you know, just kind of a couple of sentences, not a lot to work with. He's saying it's for recreation. Again, what we'd ask is a few more questions to see, is he going to stick to that story? Is he going to show us any other deceptive indicators by asking more questions about this, these vials and this recreational use? But just based on just a couple of sentences, you know, sometimes there may not be any deceptive indicators in that language.
But again, I'm thinking of my old friend Sho from Beijing. He often got the wrong word for something because he used a pocket translator. And so he would type in the word that he wanted to say in Chinese, in Mandarin specifically, and then it would come up with a word in English, and I'd be like, what are you saying? Because it would be completely the wrong word. So maybe even recreation wasn't what he was intending to say, but ESL, that he put it through a translator and came up with recreation. That seemed kind of formal and odd, you know what I mean?
All right, let's. If English isn't our first language, then we have to factor that in as well.
We're talking about statement analysis as a divining tool. We'll go to Wildcard Line, where Jan is in Brooklyn on Coast to Coast. Jan?
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, do you have any opinion about Biden? Because I just don't think he'd be able to stand up to Trump. I think Trump will walk all over him. Does Biden really think he can stand up to him?
Well, I don't know if he can answer that question, but is there anything that Biden has said that has caught your attention where you went, well, statement analysis, I would like more time with that one? Mark, anything on Biden jumped out at you?
Well, I mean, obviously he's made a lot of gaffes. I mean, Trump makes them as well. Biden's maybe made a few more than Trump has, but...
Especially lately, yeah.
You know, I haven't heard anything, you know, deceptive that he has said. I mean, I think he believes he can beat Trump, but we'll have to see if that's the case or not. But
I think that's... That maybe, too, in the case of politicians... where we won't have a chance to interview them, but we can do a better job of tracking the words they're using. And maybe that too is an indicator of people going forward, is that they write down when they hear a politician repeating certain phrases or expressions. Wildcard Line, let's say we've got Ian, a tasty Canadian, standing by. Ian?
Good evening, gentlemen. Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much to your screener for putting up with my nervousness, because I forgot the word and the phrase that I wanted to say. But what I was curious about, and going back to, I was just kidding.
Right.
Mark, what do you think the difference is between when someone says, I was just kidding, and I was only kidding?
Oh, interesting.
And something else I wanted to know was, what turned you on to the profession that you're doing now, because I find it absolutely fascinating. And one third thing, and I will take all my answers offline, is can you go over the eyes again and left hand and right hand? Because I find it absolutely fascinating.
Well, you can Google that one. You can Google that one. But let's go back over the first two. So the I think that's the difference between just and only.
Pretty similar of a phrase. Again, they're minimizing. You know, with the word only would be the same way, trying to minimizing. I was only kidding, trying to convince us that they were, you know, kidding. And so, again, it may be a truthful statement, but it's something that, you know, that light bulb in our head should turn on. Again, in an interview setting, I'm going to ask a few more questions about to see, were they kidding? Are you giving me a truthful statement? But it's very similar, the word just and only.
Mark, what got you into this?
When I went to the academy, they asked me, you know, what I wanted to teach. Now, what I ended up teaching was for 8 years, defensive tactics and physical conditioning classes. I have a degree in physical education, a black belt in the martial arts. So I spent all my time in the mat room. But the one class that they gave me when I first got there was interviewing. And I found it just so fascinating, the linguistic analysis part of it, that I said, I'm not going to give that up. And so for 8 of those years, I taught in the mat room most of the time, but I still always taught the interviewing in the classroom, because it just was very fascinating what you can learn if you just listen to what people are saying.
You know, most gym teachers also teach math. You're in normal territory. East of the Rockies, Jackie is in Ohio on Coast to Coast for Mark McClish. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hey, I wanted to ask Mark about other words or phrases used in deception. Also, how about the word honestly, when people say honestly?
Yeah, or clearly.
Oh, clearly, okay.
Yeah, another one of those. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, when people use, we call them words or phrases that indicate untruthfulness. And honestly, clearly could be in there, really. You know, obviously, I swear to God, I swear my mother's grave. And I would say 50% of the time, some people have a habit of using those phrases.
And they're meaningless.
And again, some people use them because they're trying to convince you that they're telling you the truth. You know, I swear to God I didn't do it, or honestly I didn't do it, or truthfully. And so it's definitely something to pick up on. But again, I tell people it's probably like 50% of the time. I mean, sometimes, again, they have a habit. Sometimes, you know, the word really can indicate deception. I really didn't do it. Then again, that really hurts. Well, there are different pain tolerances.
Right. The adverb is used in a different way. But that idea of the vocal habits, the vocal crutches, these pauses that we often fill by using certain words instead of saying or ah. And so if somebody's trying to buy time before they give an answer, they may say, honestly, and then determine what it is they want to say, but it really is just a time filler for a second.
Right. It's all tactic, yep.
I run into that all the time on Coast to Coast, in any interview for that matter. West of the Rockies, Gina Maria is in Washington State. Gina Maria?
Hello. Peace and love, and God bless to everyone and everything, everywhere, first of all. And my question is, when I talk to my boyfriend, or text him, I say, I love you. And he responds with, love ya, or
yeah,
love you. How do you think that is? You know, honestly.
Honestly, clearly. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, with text messages, we know people take shortcuts. And so, I mean, the best statement is just as Gina Marie said, I love you. Put the I in there. It shows commitment to the statement. But with text messages, a lot of times people want to take shortcuts and will just say, see you tomorrow, not I will see you tomorrow. Or in this case, you know, love you, something like that. So it'd be nice to include the I in there. But I wouldn't say, okay, maybe he doesn't love me. I would say maybe it's because it's a text message and he's taking a shortcut. That's why, you know, the I is missing.
Yeah. I don't know about your boyfriend. I'm sure he's a great guy. But I will tell you this, Gina Maria, when I was a younger man and I was, you know, practicing the ancient art of letter writing to GFs that were at different colleges and out of high school. If they wrote back, love ya, I knew it wasn't going anywhere. Love ya. Especially with the YA. Love ya. I knew it was bogus. All right, wild card line. Max is in McClellan, Texas on Coast to Coast. Max?
Hi, good evening.
Hi, McClellan, is that where you are?
McClellan, yes, sir, that's correct.
Thank you. Sorry, I misread the screen. Go ahead. You're talking with Mark McClish.
Thank you. First of all, I wanted to say a very interesting program. I'd like to do something, which is to make three statements and see if Mr. McClish can tell if I'm telling the truth or lying on any one or all three of them. Would that be okay?
As long as they're short and he can ask follow-up questions. Right, Mark? You need to be able to ask follow-ups.
Usually, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But go ahead, but just keep them short. Go ahead.
Okay. The first one is I wore a $2 million spacesuit in front of my entire 6th, 7th, and 8th grade assembly.
Okay.
The second statement is, I played handball with farm worker organizer Cesar Chavez. And the third statement is, I sued a computer company for $30 million and won.
I think you're being honest on all of them. But, Mark, what do you think?
I'd say the last one is deceptive. How are we doing there?
Was I right?
They're all true.
They're all true.
Of course, you don't know me, so you don't know that, but you're welcome to ask follow-up questions that you want.
You know, can I tell you what? First, my only thing on the Cesar Chavez thing is you pronounce it more correctly than I do, which is a cultural thing.
I'm
right.
Hispanic, I guess.
Right, but I grew up around people who were pronouncing it correctly, and I still don't pronounce it correctly. So that was my first thought, maybe, is that you really did. But, Mark, what would you say?
No, I just focused on the last one. I thought maybe the last one was deceptive.
I'm curious why you thought it was deceptive.
Yeah, I am too.
Maybe it's
because you,
or something, it sounds unusual.
Well, when deceptive people have to come up with a number, they will often use the number three or a number that begins with three.
How about that?
Not an absolute, but it's something you want to, if you hear, 300, 3,000, 3 o'clock, whatever, I'm going to ask a few more questions about it then.
Well, that's great. Listen, thank you so much. I enjoyed that quite a bit, Max. Thanks for jumping in. And let's see, I don't know if we've got time for any more, so I'll just have to leave it here. But let me ask you about that idea of lists, too. I was going to ask you before about lists because, and this isn't, I'm not calling you out, but I thought it was interesting when, at the very beginning of the show, we were talking about threes, and you said you listed Hillary Clinton, who is a female Democrat. Then you mentioned, with regard to dishonesty, Bruce Jenner, who was transgendered. And then you mentioned Jesse Smollett, who is an African-American gay man. And I thought, I'm not making a deal out of that list, but I was curious whether that's ever an indicator, the types of things that people include in a list, maybe just like what Max just did.
I'm not quite following you now, what you're asking.
Because in a list, usually, do we see patterns in lists that become a separate indicator when somebody is specifically listing three things that are like? Do we find anything in that when it's a multiple of one? So when we, now you have, instead of somebody saying something and you hear them say, that they've mentioned three things, well, I did this, and I did this, and I did that. Does a list of activities or a list of things that they put together in a sentence, is that ever a separate indicator?
If they mention something, list three things, that's not the same thing as I just mentioned the number three. We're looking for the actual use of the number three.
Right.
But I tell people, everything a person says has a meaning. There's a reason why they put this in their story, or there's a reason why they said it that way, or perhaps, list it that way. And so, it's something to look at. Why did they do it that way? Why did they say it that way?
There you go. Yeah. Except that, listen, Mark, this was great. Thank you so much for being on. Again, hook up with Mark McClish at coasttocoastam.com. And find out more about statement analysis, how you can sign up for a seminar or take the video series and know more at coasttocoastam.com. Open lines, finally coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.